Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And right now, we have with us on the line with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Hi, Dennis. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine, thank you. How's the weather back there? Is it getting a little warmer?
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. Well, Dennis lives back, and Dr. Cuddy lives back in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's been pretty cold there the last couple of times I talked to him. And we were going to talk today. Do you want to talk about that new book that you're just completing now on the background of 911? Well, what would you like to cover?
Sure, we can get into that. It's a follow-up to the previous book that was September 11, Prior Knowledge. This one will be called Cover Up, Government Spin or Truth? And it not only continues to look at the investigations into September 11th, but it looks into the whole question of what's going on with Iraq now and our vanishing constitutional rights.
Well, I think that's so vitally important because, of course, the USA Patriot Act had nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. It had to do with taking away our freedom. The new USA Patriot Act, too, they don't call it that, but they've been lying about it. John Ashcroft's Justice Department denied that they were planning further draconian measures, and then when some patriot working for the Justice Department leaked the text of their draconian plan to a left-wing think tank, well, they admitted, well, we did have it. We don't know why we didn't say we had it before, but it's never going to be implemented, and of course, they're lying again. In fact, this whole war on terrorism is really not a war on terrorism. It's a war on the freedom of the American people, and the people have to realize that. And these people know what they're doing. They pretend to be such pious Christians, but Christians don't lie to the American people under any circumstances.
That's absolutely right. I noticed that when they got caught, they said, well, it's just a draft. I remember when I was up in Washington, anytime they wanted to do something, they would float these things in advance. And if they got a lot of flack, they'd say, well, you know, it's just a draft. So anything you see in there you don't like, it's not written in stone yet. And so they're, I think, testing the waters, but they're going to come up with something.
Yeah, but, of course, see, all of this is to manipulate the American people. And then the repeated terrorist attacks and raising from yellow to orange, and everybody go out and buy duct tape and plastic. And, you know, are you prepared now for the coming biological attack? You know, why you should have 3 days' worth of water and have a couple of cans of soda on hand. And that's how you're going to protect yourself from a biological attack. That's not how they're protecting the people in government from the danger of biological attack. I mean, certainly immediately after 911, Dick Cheney and his whole staff went on Cipro. But they didn't tell anybody that there was going to be an attack, and people died because they kept a secret. They knew, obviously, or they suspected an anthrax attack was coming. And you know, to this very day, they won't tell why they went on Cipro on 911. And anybody who wants to know, they send them a lot of extraneous material. If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? And why, of course, in this name, supposedly fighting terrorism, have they left our borders open and allowed people from terrorist countries to continue coming in the United States? Those are questions which nobody really seems to want to ask. And, of course, we're going to be asking those in the next few minutes here with Dr. Dennis Cuddy right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and coming to us from Raleigh, South Carolina. We carry his books, so many of Dr. Cuddy's books, Secret Records Revealed, The Globalists, Now is the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order, The Road to Socialism, his chronology of the New World Order in education, prior knowledge, September 11th, prior knowledge?
That's right.
And, of course, we'll be carrying his new book as well. But if you haven't heard Dr. Dennis Ketty or read his books, why you really need to, because I consider him the finest researcher we have in the country today. And then he's actually been working on more information on the fact that very obviously they did know the attack was coming. Now, how can I make that statement? Well, certainly we know that David Shippers was told ahead of time by some people in the FBI who was afraid to come forward and risk their jobs and their pension funds, that there was going to be an attack on Lower Manhattan in early September. I have a friend of mine, Dr. Garth Nicholson, who I've known for a long time, who personally told me that he was notified by people in the FBI that on September 11th there would be an attack, and the attack would be on the Pentagon, and he told this to people in government. We know that the Mayor Willie Brown was notified the evening before, because I've talked to his press secretary on the evening of the 10th of September. Willie Brown was told it would be better to be very, very, not to avoid flying or the following day. We know that the members of the Defense Department canceled their flights on the September 11th. They did that on the September the 10th. But Dr. Ketty has come up with so much additional information. So why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The a couple of the points that you just raised are important because even today, after September 11th, if someone were to come up to you or any of your listeners and simply said, well, there might be some terrorist attack at some vague time in the future, we're not sure when, where, whatever, I doubt very seriously that any of your listeners would suddenly pick up the phone, call the airlines, and cancel their travel plans, their flight plans for the next morning. But as you indicated, that's exactly what some top Pentagon officials did. And the only explanation I can think of is that they had some specific, credible information that some sort of attack was about to occur. Now, if I had to guess what happened, being very charitable and giving them the a slight benefit of the doubt, what may have happened was there were some National Security Agency intercepts. There were other items of information, too. But let's say that they got the word that, yes, there would likely be an attack, and they're sitting there at the Pentagon, and they came through and said, well, you know, it looks like it's going to be really, really soon, maybe in the next day or two. It may be hijacking. And they said, well, in case it is, you know, maybe we ought to cancel our flight plans, and so they did. And then they sat around and said, well, now, what do we do next? Do we tell the public? And they probably had some sort of discussion, some debate, and said, well, you know, if we knew for sure it was going to be tomorrow morning, but what if it's, you know, the next morning, and then, you know, if we say it's tomorrow morning, people won't believe us, and then somebody else may say, well, what if it's just a regular hijacking, and somebody else would say, well, we've got procedures. We've experienced those before. So let's just not panic the public. And they decided not to tell the public. And then, of course, when this tragedy occurred and 3,000 people died, all of a sudden, you saw them protecting their backside by immediately everybody, George Bush, Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, all of them started saying something which I thought at the time was very strange. And that was, no one could have imagined such an attack. And immediately, it was obvious that lots of people had, quote, imagined it. So why would they be doing that? What they wanted to do was cut off in advance any of those questions that we have just asked and will be asking some more of. That if you did know these things, even if, as Dick Cheney said, we knew something big and soon, but we didn't know the particulars, even if that's all they knew, as I discussed in my September 11 prior knowledge book, surely there would have been some sort of contingency preventive planning. However, when they released Eleanor Hill and the staff of the Joint Inquiry back in September 18th released their statement, if you scan that, it's online, people can look at it for themselves, you'll see it's about 24 pages, and toward the end, Eleanor Hill and the rest of the staff of the Senate investigating this said, we can't find them even making any preparations for the event of an airliner hitting a building, whether it's the Pentagon or a World Trade Center or whatever. And very clearly, in just prior to page 24, they go over point after point after point, August 98, spring 99, where they had intelligence information saying, yes, there is a possibility that there will be an airliner hitting some building in New York City or Washington, D.C. And then, as I said, at the end, she says, we can't find any evidence that they even planned for this, how to prevent it.
Now, of course, one of the interesting things, and I think you'd brought this out, was the fact that the there was a book written in 1993 by Josef Bedersky called Attack on America. And, of course, in that book, written in 1993, he was talking about an Iranian camp in Iran, where they were actually training terrorists. They had 747s and 707s, and they were just sitting there on the ground, and they were teaching the terrorists how to hijack the planes with the thought of crashing them into our buildings. Certainly in the New Yorker magazine of the 24th of September of the year 2001, just a few days after, 10 to 13 days after the attack, why, of course, they quoted Josef Bedersky saying, yes, in 1993, we knew the Iranians were planning to hijack our planes and crash them into our buildings. There were several articles in Insight magazine by very people who had called the FBI from Europe to tell them that the attack was coming, even the day it was coming, and it was going to involve hijacking airplanes. We have those articles out of Insight, but we seem to see this effort to try to convince the American people that nobody could have thought this could have happened, and yet we know. Well, will you go ahead, Dr. Cuddy, and you tell them about all the instances that Eleanor Hill talked about in her report to the Senate Intelligence Committee. It is up on the web. Do you remember the date of that report by any chance?
September 18th.
September 18th. That was the same day then that Christian Breitwiser testified.
Right.
And she laid the whole thing out. It was very, very clear. There were so many instances, even government studies suggesting that there was going to be a terrorist attack involving airplanes and crashing into our buildings. So they had thought of this many times, hadn't they?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. As you indicated, also that Target America by Bedersky in 93, we're talking about the Iranians, which it seems this administration nor Congress seems to want to talk much about. They're focusing on Iraq. They not only had these planes which they would practice hijacking and crashing them into selected sites, but they, even back then, and this was in the 80s, said that they knew even then that they had the terrorist network was very widespread in this country. They had safe houses, false identity papers, weapons, ammunition. Now, for them to know that, they had to be monitoring these people. And so you figure if they were monitoring these people, not only from that information, Bodansky's, but Stephen Emerson's Jihad in America, or American Jihad, his book and his video, back in the 80s, where they're actually videotaping these people. We know that Emerson was in contact with the FBI, that he has a map of the exact locations, I think, in Orlando and in several other places. I can pick it up here in a minute.
Didn't they have one in Raleigh, North Carolina?
Well, that one was the Islamic Jihad.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And there was Hamas and Hezbollah. But even if you just want to focus on Al-Qaeda, he has the specific locations where Al-Qaeda is all over the U.S. Now, for him to know that back 10 years or so ago, surely the FBI then knew about this. So were they monitoring these people? Why not? One of the things I mentioned in September 11 prior knowledge is if the CIA thought it was so important that Mohammed Atta be monitored from January to May of the year 2000 over in Germany, then the next month, June, when he comes over here to flight school, it's hard to imagine that they didn't say, well, watch out for this fellow, keep monitoring him when he comes over there. And so the question is whether these people were monitored, given that we knew they were here or not, and if not, why not?
And, of course, there's so many unanswered questions. And, of course, the thing is, if there's nothing to conceal, why would the government conceal it? Why does the president refuse to allow an independent investigation? Why does he insist that he appoint the chairman of the commission? Why does he insist that, you know, there has to be six of the 10 members have to approve anybody to come in and testify? You would think if somebody had information, they would want to get that, but they can block anybody from coming in. They can, of course, block anybody from the FBI who wants to come in and tell what was known ahead of time and what they were told not to reveal. And so this commission is not set up to reveal, but to conceal from the American people. And yet, of course, September 11th was a watershed event. And, of course, what's happened since then is going to change the world forever. And we have lost so much freedom since that time. And I think the American people have the right to know what really happened that day, why there were no, when they knew that we were on the highest alert all across the country, why there were no planes in the air that day, why there were no missile batteries surrounding Washington, D.C., as we saw this last week when they went up to level orange. Why certainly the people in the South Tower were told not to evacuate the tower. In fact, I don't know if you ever heard the story of Mr. Push, Stephen Push, who lost his wife in the, I believe she was lost in the Pentagon. But the Morgan Stanley was on the top two floors of the South Tower. And the gentleman was in charge of security there. And as the loudspeaker in the South Tower was saying, stay at your seat, stay at your seat. You know, don't worry, you're perfectly safe just because the North Tower has come down. And he was racing up and down the aisles there at Morgan Stanley on the two floors. He said, get out, we're under terrorist attack. He got out almost 3,000 people. You know, they all would have died if they'd listened to the people who were telling them, don't evacuate. And, of course, that's what happened to Christian Breitweiser's husband. He was, of course, halfway down the building, and he listened to them and said, stay where you are, stay where you are. And yet the same people who were telling them that knew that another plane had been hijacked and was heading towards New York City. An amazing testimony. Everybody in the listening audience should go to the web and get Stephen Push's testimony before the Senate Select Committee, as well as Kristen Breitweiser's testimony.
That's absolutely right. And Kristen did a really good job asking a number of questions. She said if they had, as I was just saying, if the scenario that I portrayed, what they knew and decided not to warn the public, to panic and so forth, if they had warned the public, what Kristen said was her husband, when that first plane hit, would have known that they were under an attack at that moment and would have immediately fled that second building. She also raised the question of how our intelligence officers knew a week in advance what some of the hijackers were saying on the phone to each other, which is another important question that's not being answered. Also, what you said about no planes being in the air, a lot of information is about this, quote, as they say at the Pentagon, the bizarre coincidence that for September 11th of 2001, they had planned an exercise whereby a plane was accidentally going to fly into a building. What a lot of people don't remember is that, and this is especially important given what President Bush and Rumsfeld and the rest were saying, no one could have imagined such an attack. They had actually done it a year before, between October 24 and 26 of the year 2000. They actually had an exercise where a plane was supposed to have flown into the Pentagon and what to do about it. So it's not like this was catching them off guard. And in terms of Kissinger, the question that I have is, you know, he's one of the insider globalist types. So why would George W. Bush originally, Tom Keene is now the chairman, but originally Bush appointed Kissinger as to chair this commission? Why would he do that, given that Kissinger's attitude, let's say, towards our military was that our soldiers are just a bunch of animals? This is according to one of Bob Woodward's books, that Al Haig told Woodward that Kissinger referred to our soldiers as just a bunch of animals to be used in furtherance of the foreign policy. Plus, you have these interesting items of Kissinger, Karzai, and Khalilzad have all been consultants to UNICAL.
And, of course, this whole thing, really, of course, the attack on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, then was used as a justification for going to war in Afghanistan so that, of course, UNICAL could build their pipeline. Are things perhaps not exactly as they seem to be? Is reality being scoffed at? Is illusion currently king? But remember, in the battle for the survival of Western civilization, it'll be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 gripping hours of the story of a government onslaught into a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well,
hello, this is health journalist Gail Stein.
Is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable. Through regular sources, call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. By the time you reach the retirement years, the average American will be taking 7 different prescription medications. Wouldn't it be nice to stay healthy and avoid taking all those pills? One unusual molecule has been shown to be effective in maintaining health, allicin, the active ingredient in fresh garlic. You won't find much allicin in regular store-bought garlic pills, but you will in Alimax, the only 100% pure allicin garlic extract now being imported from Britain. Call 866-405-4000 to learn more about Alimax. That's 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just want to mention a couple of the products that we carry, and certainly Ready Reserve food. They've been dealing with dehydrated food for many years, food that you can store. The government has said, oh, my goodness, we're going to have a terrible crisis. You had to have 3 days of food and water on hand. Well, that's really ridiculous. If there were a real crisis, you'd want to have a store of things that you could depend on. And besides that, a lot of these readily dehydrated foods really are very good. They're soup products, some of their puddings and other things, and they're really quite economical. Now, if you'd like to know more about Ready Reserve foods, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll send you the catalog and tell you where to order it. And we think they're very good products. My wife has used them for many years. And then, of course, another product, certainly if anything were to happen in America, you'd certainly want to be able to have a clear, fresh water. And, of course, the Big Berkey is a water filter, and basically it uses ceramic filters. It's been used for many years. The basic design hasn't changed in 150 years. This is what our missionaries take off when they go around the world. And so if you would like to get one of these Big Berkey filters, ordinarily they're $279.95. They're $239.95 from Radio Liberty. And, of course, if you buy one through us, I will give you any one of our videos or 4 tape sets. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask about the Big Berkey water filter. Now, I have to tell you that they're not available at this time in either California or in Iowa. And if you want any more information on that, you can give us a call. But we cannot sell you the Big Berkey here. But out across America, why, you ought to have serious considerations about getting one. They have been time-tried and time-tested, and of course you can clean these filters if they do become soiled at all. It's a very economical means of getting clear drinking water. We recommend the Big Berkey water filter to you. And again, the telephone number to call is 1-800-544-8927. Call now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our special guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And if you have not read his books, you need to. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. His Secret Records Revealed, his book on globalism, his book on Now is the Dawning, The Road to Socialism, the NEA, what is that, NEA Exposed?
Yes, the National Education Association.
All right, fine. And then we have on the timeline for the New World Order in Education. We carry so many of Dr. Cuddy's books here, and they're all available by calling 1-800 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WARN. And Dr. Cuddy was talking about all of the information that was known ahead of time, and absolutely nothing was done. No planes in the air from the time that the first plane was hijacked until the last plane hit the Pentagon. 1 hour and 40 minutes expired, and not one plane to defend the nation's capital. Do you honestly believe that they had no planes to defend the United States? And then, of course, they brought them in from Cape Cod. They arrived 12 minutes late. I mean, is there anybody out there in the listening audience who believes that our military is that ill-prepared? And why won't they allow an independent investigation of what happened that day? Because 9/11 changed America and is being used to take away our freedom.
That's another excellent question, because we can remember just a few years ago when the golfer Payne Stewart's plane went up, and then as that tragedy unfolded, I think it was within just 16 minutes that a fighter plane was up there escorting, you know, going up to sea, and as that plane went further and further north, of course it was succeeded by additional fighters taking turns. But the point is, immediately it is standard operating procedure for a military aircraft to get in the air, just in case, you know, something is going on that they want to know about. And so they immediately launch these aircraft to find out what's the matter. Now, you know, secondarily, Dick Cheney tried to make this, you know, rationalization that, well, we had to decide whether to shoot it down or something. But that's really, I mean, even if you want to get into that, that's secondary. The point is, the plane should have gone up according to standard operating procedure, and the fact that they did not even get into the air, it lends one to believe that they were told not to do that.
Would you cover briefly the two magic passports, one that fluttered to the ground from the plane that exploded or whatever happened in Pennsylvania, and then the other one that fluttered to the ground adjacent to the World Trade Center, these two magic passports that somehow jumped out of the this flaming inferno and just fell to the ground? They were the passports of these hijackers?
Sure. They are really rather magical, because it's really an inferno. Anybody who saw September 11th, where the planes hit those towers, it was just a ball of fire. But supposedly at that location, not too far away from the building, what happened was people found this almost pristine, intact passport of one of the hijackers. And as you've indicated, over and over again, we identified those hijackers rather quickly, within 24 hours. So not only did somebody pick up this passport, they immediately knew it was one of the hijackers whose passport had come down. Everything else was burning in a ball of flame, but this passport, made largely of paper and plastic, seemed to make it out okay.
I figured he probably threw it out the window there before they crashed.
Right. He slid that window open and then tossed it out, because he wanted people. It's sort of like the ones up in Boston left all their maps and manuals in this car right there at the airport, so it could be easily and quickly found by the authorities, you know, to be really, really sure that these people were who they were said to be. Now, the one in Pennsylvania is the exact same thing. That plane descended at a rather steep angle, although there had been a trail of debris for some miles, which, again, is a curious thing. If it's, you know, all at the last second just taking a nosedive, was this trail of debris for about 10 miles backward from the plane. But let's say it dives steeply into the ground so that even the voice recorder is incinerated. Once again, you have this passport that's found. Now, it's not... I'll continue after the break on that one.
All right, fine. In fact, this was actually up on the FBI website for a time. I guess they felt that maybe even the American people weren't so stupid they'd believe that. They pulled it down, but Dr. Cuddy was kind enough to get me a copy of it, and we have it in our files, a copy of this partly burned passport from one of the hijackers. Wasn't it convenient? Now we know who the hijackers were because we found their passport. Or is somebody, of course, creating a reality for the American people? We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and then, of course, we want to mention a couple of the other items that we carry, and, of course, we carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and we think this is an excellent, excellent product. It's actually a soap and a moisturizing soap and a neutralizer and a lotion, and then there is a gel, and we, of course, can't make any medical claims, but we can tell you an awful lot of our listeners tell us it's really helped them in many, many ways. And so if you'd like to learn more about Miracle 2 soap products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We will be glad to send you a brochure on it, or if you'd like, of course, we'd be glad to have you order at a reduced price a complete set of the products. And I will tell you that we get an awful lot of return traffic. People have used the products, love them. Miracle 2 soap products available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we also carry Phenopoly, and if you have a child in government school, most of them are not being taught to read phonetically, and Phenopoly is aimed at teaching them to read phonetically. It's a game, it's played like Monopoly, where you go around the board, but in the process, the child learns the basic sounds of the language, when an A is an AA or an AA, and of course, the 12 rules of the English language, and it basically it's not only good for children, but for anybody, and I'll have to admit I played it, and I learned some things there about the English language I never learned in college. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for a Phenopoly set. I don't think you'll be unhappy if you get one, and I think it, of course, will benefit any child or any adult who plays the game. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let's get back to Dr. Dennis Ketty. He's telling us about these miracle passports, and you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, they're manipulating the American people, and with the help of the media, and of course, with the silence of the church. Why are they able to get away with this? Where are you going to learn the truth about these things? Yes, there is the Internet, and if you have the time to research it, you'll become well aware. But there's even putting a lot of disinformation and lies up there to get people so confused they cannot think effectively about anything that's going on. And then, of course, those who do think effectively, they terrorize them. And they're playing games with our minds right now, trying, of course, to get us so fearful we can't do anything. And this is the time, if there was ever a time, you're going to have to learn to rely on the Lord for your protection. It's now. But that doesn't excuse you from not being involved, because I think he expects us to be involved in this truly spiritual battle for the souls and hearts of mankind. So pick up the story there, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay, the photo I sent you was from the FBI website, as you indicated shortly thereafter they yanked that off of there. But if your listeners want to still see the photo, there's another place they can. There's a outfit online, www.cooperativeresearch.org, and they actually have a 9/11 timeline from 1979 to 2000, and toward the end of that, they'll put actually two photos of Jarrah. Ziad Jarrah is the one in question. He's the one that he was questioned at Dubai, United Arab Emirates, early in 2001. And, you know, there's another one we just let slip by. And they have two photos. One is the slightly charred passport photo that was found in the Pennsylvania site that managed to avoid obliteration.
Gee, that was just amazing that they were, wasn't it just amazing now that they know definitely he was one of the hijackers?
Well, yeah, but then they have another photo of him next to it, which doesn't look quite the same. And so you got to wonder where these passports are coming from. And so there's a number of other photos on that website of the individuals and some interesting questions that are asked. And so that's basically the story of the magic passports. There's a lot of these things that just conveniently happen or show up. Again, like I said, Christian Breitwiser says, in effect, you know, how do you know what these two terrorists, future hijackers, a week in advance of September 11th are talking about on a phone unless you're actually monitoring them?
And for our listeners out there, if you'd like a copy of Christian Breitwiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee, if you give us a call, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the October newsletter. We produced the whole thing right from their site. You can go up, of course, and get it off the Internet, or if you don't have the Internet, we'll be glad to send you the newsletter. And it's there. Read it through and ask yourself, how could these things be? There's so much that she brings out. Even more significant, why did the media censor what she said? Why didn't they talk about what her testimony was? Why do they focus our attention on a lot of unimportant things? And probably one of the most important bits of testimony given before the Select Committee was given by Christian Breitwiser and censored by our major media.
That's absolutely correct. And in the opposite direction, what you find is that the media is not asking that I think are very important certain questions about this, what I believe is probably a future war against Iraq. The scenario, since my book Cover Up gets into that before time slips by, let me just touch on a couple of things regarding that. Because that looks what's in the offing here. There are several possibilities as I see it. If the current administration defers to the UN, this of course would bolster the UN's claim to be some sort of world government, and it would bolster this notion of the international community. If we decide to act either unilaterally or with a fairly small number of allies, then we will not be able, the U.S. will not be able in the future to say to a country, you must do such and such because the international community has said, because that country, North Korea, China, whoever, would be able to turn around and say, well, you know, why should we listen to you? You didn't do what the U.N., the international community, said regarding Iraq. Certain things the media floats seem improbable, like this massive rebellion on the part of the Iraqi forces. In the first place, in a control situation like that, they're probably already monitored. They're probably, Saddam Hussein has assassins in every single unit, so that any of the leaders who want to defect or turn would be immediately assassinated, their families as well. However, for us to act, we will have to act within about a month, because then the hot weather comes and you have to wear these very cumbersome uniforms if you're going into an area where there might be chemical or biological weapons used against you. So it may be that there's some sort of pretext. Maybe one of our planes flying over the no-fly zone, monitoring it, might be coincidentally shot down, and we would say, well, this is, you know, an act of aggression. We have to respond to it. Never mind that we've already, you know, been back and forth with them. They're them shooting at us, and we have been blowing out their missile batteries. But if we do actually go into war, into a conflict with Iraq, there's two possibilities. Number one, if it's a fake war, meaning, you know, a stage sort of presentation, it'll probably be over within 2 weeks to 4 weeks, relatively quickly, with relatively few casualties on our part, including weapons of mass destruction, biological, chemical. There probably will be at least one major incident. It may be anthrax spread around Basra or some civilian population, simply so that we can say, aha, see, we told you he had them and that he's this ruthless person who doesn't mind killing his own people. Now, the fact is that he doesn't mind killing his own people, and that's why I think the warfare will not be a bunch of tanks and planes sitting out in the open in the desert challenging us. They'll probably park the tanks next to civilian centers, as was done in Kosovo. You'll probably have the army not dressed as the army, dressed really as civilians, located in hotels and mosques, in civilian living quarters, because the civilian population has been armed with handguns and such. And these soldiers will be there to see that the little children and women actually do, you know, get out front and try to kill Americans in this urban sort of guerrilla environment. But even worse than that, not only will they use any weapons of mass destruction against Israel or Kuwait or whatever if they have them, hoping that the Israelis will retaliate and that would cause other Arab nations to come on their side. I don't think the media, this is another case of the media, I don't think the media or the administration has been fully frank with the American public about what this war could mean here. If this war is a real war, and if Saddam is a ruthless tyrant and evil person, which he is, then surely he, if he figures we're out to get him, to do him in, to kill him, he will not stop at anything, and he would release the agents that he surely has in this country. You remember in our previous talks we've mentioned how we, the U.S. government settled 8,000 Iraqi soldiers after the Gulf War here in this country, a lot of them around Oklahoma City. Maybe some of them were the John Doe 2, 3, and 4 involved in the Murrah Federal Office Building bombing. But even if they weren't, our own government in the last couple of weeks had acknowledged that there are about 3,000 Iraqis who they have no idea in this country where they are. Let's say that maybe just one-tenth, probably more, but let's say one-tenth, 300 are Saddam's agents, sort of like Castro's boat people he sent over here and some of his agents were sent in there. Let your mind, and I don't want to, I'll give two specifics, but I don't want to do more than that because I don't want to put anything in anybody's mind. But since this has already been brought up, I'll give two specifics. If your listeners would just let your mind wander about what an evil, ruthless person could do with his agents, just 300 agents in this country, it's really important, and he could do much, much worse. The American people, all they remember, a few of them, are is Pearl Harbor, and that was just Hawaii. And, of course, September 11th was an attack, but it was a one-day attack. They really aren't familiar with having war on the streets of wherever, Santa Cruz, Los Angeles, Chicago, wherever, for any extended period of time. So how much does a $5 crowbar, a crowbar costs about $5 at your local hardware store. These terrorists know where the passenger trains are. They have the schedule. They, you know, travel, let's say, from Los Angeles through Santa Cruz at 3 in the morning or wherever. They know where the downhill grades are. They know where the curves are. How much effort does it take at 3 in the morning to go out and yank up a track as one of these trains is going 60 miles an hour with 700-800 people in it and throwing it over a cliff? You remember a few years ago, one of these cults, I think up in Oregon or the state of Washington, put some sort of bacteria or E. coli or salmonella in a restaurant salad bar.
Right, right.
All right, imagine that, 300 times over, or 300 times as well. Just let your imagination run wild as to what just 300, that's, you know, I mean, it's probably more, but 300 people in this country could do. Americans, I've got this impression, are envisioning this coming war with Iraq sort of like the Gulf War, where, you know, we just drop a bunch of bombs on a bunch of soldiers sitting out in the middle of nowhere, and it's over very quickly. And I'm afraid that if this is a real war, that the violence may be visited on the streets of America, and Americans just aren't used to that.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, that book we talked about earlier, Target America, by Joseph Podansky. He, of course, for our listeners, Joseph Podansky is he's the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Nonconventional Warfare, so he's very well versed, and we've read several books by him, very intelligent fellow, a lot of access to information. But he said that at the time of the original Gulf War, there were a number of Islamic terrorist cells here. They were under the control of Iran and Syria, and Saddam anticipated when, of course, he was making all these belligerent threats against us, you know, that he would be able to mobilize these when the attack came. And, of course, when the Desert Storm came, why Iran and Syria wouldn't cooperate, and, of course, none of these terrorist cells were mobilized. But, you know, then, of course, the thought is, if they were there then, they're probably here now. They had them under tight, absolute tight control. Is this the time when they're going to release these terrorist cells? Because we've been bringing in Islamic terrorists for many, many years. Our government has allowed them to come in. They've been financed by our good friends, the Saudis. Their radical mosques are here. They take these Islamic clerics over to Saudi Arabia and indoctrinate them. They've invested billions of dollars recruiting terrorists from our prisons, converting blacks into the Muslim religion. Is this the time? Because I almost have a feeling there's a timetable. Somebody's reading a script and things are going right according to schedule. Is that your impression at all? Do you ever have that feeling that things are never what they really appear to be?
All the time. That's one of the things, since you're mentioning Saddam, that I thought was curious. Back at the first Gulf War, he had these 700 or 800 guests, as he called them. They are actually hostages, and instead of, placing them strategically at his communication center and so forth so we wouldn't bomb them, he says, I'll just let them go. Same thing with Osama bin Laden. You find in various sources that are written books, actually Budansky wrote a book about bin Laden just back in 1999 as well. You find, and Budansky has verified, that Osama bin Laden probably has chemical, biological, and nuclear suitcase weapons. So I'm asking myself, if you got all this stuff, if you got, say, 20 nuclear suitcase devices, what are you sending 4 piddly little planes into buildings for? And so it's almost as though some people have said, since Osama was a CIA asset back in the 80s, how do we know now whether he is or isn't? Now, I have no proof that he is or still is, but we know he was back in the 80s. And so it's very suspicious in terms of if things were to happen logically, you would expect certain people to do certain things, and they haven't. So it appears to be, as you just said, that things are not as they appear.
Well, of course, one of the most interesting things, and it's a point Joel Skousen has made many times, and we're told that we've got all these terrorist cells in America, just waiting to strike at America. And yet, since September 11th, with the exception of the anthrax attack, which probably came from American military labs, because it was our strain of anthrax, there have been no major terrorist attacks. So somebody has all of these terrorist groups under very, very strict control. If we have them all, or somebody has them under very strict control, who is that somebody, and do they intend to unleash them when this war begins? I frankly don't know, but I have a very uneasy feeling. I can remember reading about the Boer War, 1899. And the English, of course, sent their army into South Africa against these Boers, these Dutch farmers. And they said, this is going to be a tea time war. Our boys will be home by Christmas. Well, 3 years later, 100,000 British casualties later, the army came home. One of the greatest defeats of all time. And that was the beginning of the end of the British Empire. And a few years after that, then the First World War, and then the Second World War. And of course, it used to be said that England ruled the waves, but today England waves the rules. So that's about all.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And once again, I think you raise an excellent point there. And if Osama bin Laden is this great mastermind and could plot and plan and coordinate these 19 people on these planes, September 11th, 2001, who are willing to even commit suicide, the logical question that I think I and you and everybody else is asking, if he can get 19 people willing to commit suicide, why is it he couldn't get just one more person to commit any of these lethal, non-suicidal, simple acts, which they may even have been able to get away with? The FBI waited about 9 months to get some sort of report together, and about 9 months before Congress had its report. Isn't it just terribly nice of these terrorists to wait 9 months for us to have this investigation before they do anything, even a non-suicidal terrorist attack? And as I indicated, if the war is real, if this coming war is a real one, you should expect a ruthless dictator, an evil person, to loose his agents to do a tremendous amount of damage. And as I said, I only mentioned two areas. If your listeners let their minds wander, they can think of all sorts of other things. So if that does not happen, then your listeners ought to seriously consider whether this whole thing was real or whether it was staged.
sort of a wag the dog situation and with using real live people. But then any of your listeners who haven't read the Operation Northwood report, which was actually put out by the government of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the CIA back in the 60s on how they were going to precipitate a war with Castro. It's in the order of the book, We Decide. You will get a free copy of that. It's now declassified, available. Dr. Cuddy, it's always a pleasure having you with us. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. And again, when will that book be available?
I hope within a month.
All right, fine. Well, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and order the other books, September 11th, Fire Knowledge, Secret Records Revealed, The Globalist, Now with the Dawning, The Road to Socialism, are all available here at Radio Liberty. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if there's one book you're going to get, let me suggest it would be Brotherhood of Darkness. It's only $12.95 plus shipping, and Brotherhood of Darkness certainly will give you the overview of the people who work within the shadows controlling what's going on in the world. And so if you'd like to get the Brotherhood of Darkness, you can get it by itself, or I actually encourage you to get the Brotherhood of Darkness special, which includes the book, a video and an audio tape, and of course it's $29.95 for the special plus shipping. And actually, I got a call from a minister the other day. Somebody in his congregation had given him a copy, invited him over to see the Brotherhood of Darkness video, and he's going to be a guest in our program in the very near future. I see we have Alex from Marina. Well, we'll take him just as soon as we get back. So give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and order either the Brotherhood of Darkness or the Brotherhood of Darkness special. If you'd like to get that Operation Northwood report, we offer that free if you get a copy of Redecide. It's the ultimate story of who killed President Kennedy. It's written based upon the papers of the Director of Covert Operations of the CIA, Robert Crowley. He wanted people to understand why they had to kill Kennedy. Fascinating, you'll actually read what he wrote, and these papers were left with a friend of mine, Mr. Gregory Douglas. So call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order Redecide, and then, of course, we ask for the Operation Northwood. We'll give that to you. Or if you order this afternoon, just this one time, a copy of Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and ask for the Operation Northwood, why, we'll give that to you as well. And don't forget the four tape set that comes with that, Life-Saving Secrets. But call 1-800-544-8927, Health and Nutrition Secrets, Life-Saving Secrets, and Regicide. Well, Dr. Stan, we've got Alex on the line. We're just about out of time. You have a quick question, Alex?
Dr. Stan, just calling to say that everything's on track, that the Institute of the Constitution workshop is kicking off in Marina Monday evening at 7:30.
And how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to attend that Institute of the Constitution workshop?
Yes, they can call toll-free 877-448-5798. That's toll-free 877-448-5798, and the classes will be held at the Marina First Assembly Church at 3185 DeForest Road in Marina, California. If they need directions, they can call and get that information.
Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you want to know what you can do. The first thing you can do is, of course, know you have a personal relationship with the Lord. But the second one is understand our Constitution and the Christian foundation of this once great nation. Well, thanks so much for calling, Alex. And again, the number is 877-448-5798. You should go, you should learn, and then set up one of these institutes on your own. Thanks so much for calling, and please call again to remind our listeners, okay?
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Let us know how many people show up.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. And then this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're really dependent upon those of you in the listening audience to help us so that we can continue doing what we're doing as we reach out across America 5 hours every day. And actually, today it'll be 6 hours. I did the John Stadtmiller program from 2 to 3 this afternoon. But what a unique opportunity, especially in times like this, to try to make people understand that there's a spiritual battle going on. There's a conspiracy against God. It's laid out in the Bible in Jeremiah 11:9, Ezekiel 22:25. Read about it. And it's that same conspiracy going on today. And you have to understand that there are people who worship Satan, who worship Lucifer, and they're working to create a new world order and a new world religion. And they're using the power and the financial strength of the United States to bring this about. And that's why they had to take the United States over. That's why they put their symbol on the back of the dollar bill. If you don't believe that these things are going on, look at the back of the dollar bill. What's that demonic Luciferian symbol, the pyramid? Look at that eye. That is not the eye of God. That is the eye of Lucifer you're looking into. And that symbol is as old as time. It goes back to the time of ancient Babylon and Nimrod. And it has all been the symbols of the secret society. And get that wonderful movie, The Man Who Would Be King, with Sean Connery. It all centers around that emblem. And when you see it, you'll understand what we're really talking about. And that symbol was identified with Alexander the Great, who was also a student of the mysteries. If you doubt that, I'll read Plutarch's The Life of Alexander, translated by Scott Hively, where he tells you about how furious Alexander was when he realized that Aristotle had written a book laying out the background of the mysteries that anybody could read. And, of course, that would take away Alexander's ability to conquer the world. At least he thought it would. And Aristotle wrote back, said, "You have nothing to worry about, Alexander, unless you've been schooled in the mysteries. There's no way you would understand it simply reading a book." And that's the trouble we are today. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can begin to get a grasp of what this is all about. So we hope many of you out there will decide you want to join the Radio Liberty family, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month. You've got our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us as we reach out and expand our coverage in major cities across America. We hope, of course, many of you will, if you can't afford the regular membership in the Radio Liberty family, you'll want to subscribe to our newsletter. If you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, either the October newsletter that gives the story of what really happened on 9/11, Kristen Breitweiser's testimony, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Or if you our latest newsletter deals with the coming possibility of a biological attack on America, and what, of course, this is really all about, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
How you doing?
Sure, I'll bring it back.
Okay, be sure to bring it back tomorrow. Yep.
Well, we've got to put a set a limit on this.